Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, supported by Lacole, here with the indomitable Benji Narsen. He's got Aaron Beru over his right shoulder. Would it be a stage for Aaron Beru today? Not lying to you today, and I didn't yesterday. Today I actually watched the stage, so you can take my insights a bit more seriously. Today's stage, a difficult one, and I really like the design. It reminds me of some Vuelta stages, 171Ks, rolling course. We have in the last 80 kilometers, four climbs, and there's long 20-kilometer valleys, 20, 15K valleys between those short climbs, 2K 7%, 2K 6%, 3K 6%. The last one, the Côte de Montrebeau, 1,400 meters, 11%, short ridge line, and narrow descent, and it's a narrow climb. Like, we're talking one lane. Again, I'm in Europe now, but I just don't understand how it's even legal to have two cars on those roads, and then it's a false flat descent on a wider highway sort of road to the finish. And big contenders for the day, Colbrelli was the favorite, and then Aaron Beru sort of riders as well, Valverde, were all hanging around sort of 10 to 1. But Colbrelli was the big favorite, particularly after how he's been going. Big thanks to our show partner, Lacole. Lacole, if you haven't heard of them by now, if you're just tuning in, you only watch French races and you listen to the Dauphiné podcast, Lacole produce performance cycling apparel. They have proven for speed. They have the Lacole McLaren Project Aero collaboration that went live last month. I'd encourage you to go and check that out. They have a speed suit included in that as well. And let us know down below, what sort of Lacole bundle would you like to see for the Tour de France Velo Games prize? We obviously had that for the Giro d'Italia. Somehow I didn't take out the prize. I mean, kind of a conspiracy against me. But yeah, let us know which Lacole kit you'd like to see as the Tour de France prize in the comments down below or on Twitter, hashtag LRCP. Breakaway went Benji, that's almost got me lost for words. I thought the break would win. This break was almost too strong to be allowed to win.
Yeah, and I think that's the exact problem. I think the breakaway started out with two riders from the Koenig, Czerny, but also Asgreen, a rider that's on, I think, 9 seconds in GC before the stage starts. Yeah. So that's going to be troublesome to try and get a gap that is, yeah, that is pretty high, because the peloton's going to be like, if we give this guy 3 minutes, well, it's going to become troublesome if we don't catch him by at least 40K to go, because if he takes those 10 seconds, he's got the jersey. Then next to that, we've got another team that had big plans in the break today. Stuyven in the breakaway, but also two teammates, Ryan Mullen and Julien Bernard, and then two lone Rangers, Girmay and also Gauthier. So very strong breakaway. The fact with these kind of breakaways is you've got Czerny that can ride for Asgreen, you've got Bernard and Mullen who can ride for Stuyven. There's also Tim Mullins in that breakaway, so yeah, they can definitely ride. But trouble there is, again, Asgreen, he's trying something today, but he's basically the person in the breakaway that's neutralizing it from the inside by being in the breakaway. And I think that became a problem at a certain point, because I think it was with 50K to go on the third last climb that we saw split up in the front group, and that was Czerny and Mullen attacking. And at first I was like, okay, are they now attacking each other? Because one would say that it would be much better if those two teams kept working together to have their two leaders fight it out with Wellens, Girmay, and Gauthier on the final climb than trying to get away right here, because they're reducing the impact that this breakaway can have. And with a gap like 1 minute, it's likely going to be a sad ending for the breakaway. But then you made a nice point while we were watching the race, and you brought the point forward that Asgreen being in the breakaway must have been so much trouble that maybe they split it up because of that?
Yeah, I thought Quickstep made the decision. They're like, we're being held at 1 minute, 1 minute 30 all day, and the reason is Casper's in this break. And what we're going to do is we're going to let Czerny, a complete non-GC threat, go, and maybe that will then have the desired outcome, which we've seen, where Ineos go to the front and let Czerny take 3 minutes. Czerny's a strong guy. Maybe he can go with – who's the Trek rider? He went with Trek rider as well.
Mullen,
exactly. Another non-threat GC at all. And I think that's what they were hoping would happen. And I'm surprised, first of all, that Askren went in the break. Same with Wellens. I thought they would have been hoping headwind on the final climb. Benji was toning my expectations yesterday, tempering them about GC action on that climb, saying, you know, come on, there's not going to be fireworks. Benji ended up being 100% right on that. And if I'm Askren and Wellens, I'll be looking at hoping that would happen, sit in the group. Wellens could attack over the crest, not a GC threat. Ineos will let him take 30. Askren for the final sprint. But they kind of cooked themselves beforehand. So somewhat surprising. But yeah, Czerny goes, but he's brought back. And I'm not sure whether he was just cooked, Benji, or whether he was – I think it's tough in those valleys. It's like exposed grass farmland with no protection. It looked a little bit windy.
Like West Flanders.
Yeah, like West Flanders, which I got to go to eventually. Benji's been going to be at me to go there. But anyway, not quick step. Ineos tried something, Benji. They went for the classic Kwiatkowski Stage 7 echelon split move, and I guess the wind wasn't strong enough. What do you think? You think they would definitely had a plan to get G – Thomas back some time today after yesterday's disappointment?
Well, I don't think it's a pre-planned thing. I think that they perhaps knew that the wind there could be in the right decision and then accordingly acted during the stage if they noticed that it was actually an area where echelons could form. But it doesn't seem like the area was long enough or that the wind was strong enough to split up the peloton. So despite that being a cool move, it didn't really go anywhere. But we do appreciate it every time because echelons do make races a lot more fun. But after that, I just felt like there wasn't too much to it because we had the last climb basically ahead of us. The breakaway was basically caught. And the last climb is that steep one you mentioned in the profile thing at the start of this podcast. And teams were in decent positions. Like we saw that of old Verde was moving up to the right front of the peloton. And I was thinking perhaps he could try it, but like you mentioned already, nothing did end up happening on that climb except for one attack. Lawson Craddock ended up attacking there. And it's kind of surprising, but I don't know. It feels like he's a lot more sad to watch when he doesn't have a duck helmet on because I can't make the putt anymore, which is
he would have won with
devastating.
It.
Yeah, definitely.
Pock, you're fucking over Lawson Craddock. If he's got a duck painted on that helmet, he wins today's World Tour stage. So I guess you hate your riders because you don't want to give him the correct paint job. I thought looking at this final climb, very disappointed in Movistar. You know, I said it in my highlight video yesterday. I said it to Benji. And I don't know why I keep doing it. I keep saying this is what they should do. And I'm correct. I mean, I'm happy to be proven wrong, but I'm not wrong. Like if they go, this climb is narrow. Like no one could move up. Craddock was one of the only guys that could move up. He nearly went into the grass trying to move up. They got the team, Arkas, Rojas, Erviti. Verona. I'm not saying blow up the climb with Miguel Angel Lopez and Mas. If you want to pretend on GC, that's your right. That's your cut target, whatever. I accept it. There's no excuse for not having those guys put Valverde into a good position at the base of the climb and at least pacing with Verona early. And Ineos, they do exactly that. Ineos have their men straight up, and it's so narrow that if you start at the front, you've got more wiggle room. You're doing the climb slower. You can set the pace. Ineos had the pace with Dylan Van Baal. And yeah, why were you not expecting big GC fireworks today, Benji, on this final climb?
Well, I think it's a combination of the teams that have not shown the ambition to go for stages and are more protective about their teams. And also the fact that a lot of these teams have multiple leaders. And because of that, don't necessarily have the people to do it or want to use the people to do it. I think that you're completely right that Movistar is the one team that definitely has the riders to do it. I think that Astana could have done more today as well.
Oh, really?
I think the problem with Astana is that Izaguirre and Lutsenko are now up there in GC and Amboru could go for the sprint. Oscar Rodriguez is basically the only one you have left at this point. So that's the problem with Astana right now is that they've got two GC leaders instead of perhaps the planned one. And they still have an Amburu who could do really well on the stage. But I don't know. I think that Movistar could indeed have done something. Am I blaming them for not doing it? For the entertainment, perhaps?
Valverde looked good,
for
right?
For not trying, I guess. But I think that Colbrelli was displaying that he was going to get over this climb. And I didn't think at any point he was going to get dropped. And if you're Valverde, you're not going to beat Colbrelli in the sprint. Sorry. Yeah, I don't see it happening.
No.
And that's why I'm thinking like, okay, perhaps the... Yeah, but then again, aren't you going to try and put the pressure to drop Colbrelli on the climb? Because he didn't get in trouble because nobody tried.
That's what I mean. That's what I was expecting teams to do. That's what I... Even Astana. But the problem is, as you said, and Bahrain were caught in this trap, but they've broken free of this trap. They got Hagen turns there for sort of GC, and you got Colbrelli, and there's a tension between those two, and that tension is screwing over a lot of teams being able to win stages, but not with Bahrain. Bahrain decided we will sacrifice Hagen turns to go for the Colbrelli stage win opportunity. And I think that I was expecting, even if without GC action, I was expecting attacks from, say, a Vingegaard, McNulty, because if a group of three or four, like in that Basque Country stage, that is Aguirre one Benji in the group of five with Buchmann, yep, McNulty, Vingegaard. If a group like that goes over the top, gets a 20-second lead, very difficult to bring back. And Kranich was extremely difficult to bring back. He cooked Haig and turns. They were both chasing. Haig initially over the top was controlling, trying to keep it all together for Colbrelli. 13 Ks downhill to the finish. And you basically got Kranich not... You know, he's good on the flat. I think he's a strong time trialist, actually, Kranich, good at world championships often. And yeah, he's got basically head-to-head against Haig. Turns comes up. Turns starts pulling for Bahrain. Colbrelli's gone down to $1.70, $1.60 in the live markets. And then, but it's still Kranich. 3Ks. He's still out there. Turns has pulled off and Haig has to close the last section. Then it's Ineos. Ineos Grenadiers come forward. Again, not setting up Kwiatkowski for a sprint. And we've got a series of roundabouts coming up. And I was thinking the whole time, Haig is vulnerable here because he's been chasing downhill for 13 kilometers. We have a big group. They've all bunched up. Perstelberger, Aaron Barou are there. And what did you see from the Ineos Grenadiers, Benji, in this final sort of 2 kilometers? It was pretty textbook from them.
Yeah, I think with 3 kilometers to go, I was still thinking perhaps they're just keeping their rider at the front. They're trying to keep... In these roundabouts, these dangerous roundabouts, they're trying to keep Thomas safe, they're trying to keep Bort safe, and that's why they're at the front. But looks like they had a bit of a, not necessarily a plan, I think, but they did want to try something when they noticed things at the end. And I think that it all came around to one hairpin corner. Was it with 800 meters to go, 900 meters to go, just going into the final kilometer where Ineos was basically at the front of the peloton and Bahrain was not at the front of the peloton. And they go into that corner. I think that Thomas decides to go just after the hairpin corner and the Ineos rider behind him decides to just kind of not necessarily block everybody, but slow down the pace. And there was not imminently a response from Bahrain. It took a bit for that Bahrain rider, was it Haig again, to get to the front and start pacing again. And Thomas had, what did he have, 10 meters, 20 meters?
Yeah, he just kept extending it. I mean, I made an Instagram video about it just this last kilometer, and Thomas is saying it's not planned, but it looks so planned as you look back at it. Under the Flamme Rouge, Kwiatkowski is looking for Thomas. He's on the right side of the road. He swings to the left. Thomas is able to move up positions before the hairpin, as Benji said, and seems to me that looks like Kwiatkowski knows what's about to happen. And yeah, I think it just,
right,
Haig got shut off in the hairpin, I think, because he was caught behind the Ineos team. And Ineos, they're blocking because they got all those numbers at the front. And it's then you basically got a situation where you've got Haig, you've got a huge group behind. You've got Haig who's been chasing for 13Ks against Thomas, who's still got really good, you know, seated power for over a kilometer, dialing it back like he's in, you know, the track team in 2011. And it's him against Haig head to head. He keeps going. He's got a huge gap, 50 meters, 60 meters, 70 meters. He's almost out of sight of the peloton. And then get into the final 300 meters and he's dying, it looks like. And Colbrelli jumps from the back and he's closing so quickly. I mean, Thomas had a lead of like 50, 60 meters with 150 meters to go. Colbrelli snap jumps across it. He gets into Thomas' slipstream. They go to the line together, photo finish. It looks like Thomas is almost posted up too early. He ends up winning by about half a wheel width or wheel length, The thing is, it was an optical illusion because Cole Bradley was coming so quickly that he's like shoots past Thomas. It looks, you know, like he's won and Thomas has stuffed it. But vintage from Thomas, excellent execution from Ineos. Did Cole Bradley make a mistake, Benji? Should he have snapped onto Thomas' wheel when he goes? Because I think he could have, to be honest. And maybe that's what Caleb Ewan did, right? He closed it early himself in the Giro.
He probably could have. And I think it's an on-point decision to do so. I also don't really blame him for not doing it. I think that it's a very difficult decision with 800 meters to go to say, oh, I'm going to try and go onto the wheel of someone that's making a move.
Yeah.
I think that it's very ballsy to do that if you're Cole Bradley, because then you're playing with your own chances. If an Aramburu is in your wheel, then it might get troublesome in the end. But he waited, and it seems like he waited just a tiny bit too long. And you're thinking about it afterwards. What if he went 5 meters earlier, then he would have won this race.
Yeah, he still nearly won.
But I think that's very hard to say. I think that he perhaps didn't trust the sprint from Stad for it out of, obviously. So he had to wait until a moment where he feels like, okay, I need to go now. The person in front of me is done. I need to make the move myself. And the gap is still manageable, so I'm going to try and catch it. But this was basic vintage Thomas, like you mentioned. I remember the good old days in his British NC jersey where he was leading out people. That's the kind of that's the kind of stuff it reminds me of personally. But really cool to see, and it spiced up the final. It could just as well have been a sprint between Cole Bradley and the rest, and it spiced it up a bit. It's a bit of an upset in the sprint, and I enjoy such moments, to be honest. But let's talk about the man himself. I often joke about Aramburu, but he's actually genuinely getting better, and his sprint is getting better.
Benji's got to be on the payroll of his agent. Is he out of contract?
Yeah, he is.
You're hijacking the LRCP to create a hype train to increase his contract value. I'm not getting any money out. I'm not getting paid shit for this. Yeah, sorry, go on. You're saying he's looking better, of course.
Yeah, he's actually getting rumored to go to Movistar next season. So I'm not entirely happy about that. But anyway, I feel like this guy has got 9th in stage 1, 9th in stage 2, 2nd in stage 3, and 3rd in stage 5. And he crashed yesterday in the time trial in the second part. He crashed, I think, again today. I'm not sure it was him for Astana that crashed. But I thought before he was more the punchy guy, while his sprint was decent, but not on the level to beat decent sprinters. But now he's actually like getting closely beaten by Cole Bradley in these sprints. Then again, the people he's beating is Barbero and Valgren, so I guess I'm a bit overhyped on this today, but I still think that he's getting better and better, and I enjoy that. Cole Bradley, simply the best sprinter that is left over climbs in this race by far, so he's on paper unbeatable on this terrain.
I'll do the top 10, and then I'm going to throw out a thought bubble that actually just shook me when I thought of it. Thomas first, same time as Cole Bradley, Aramburu, Barbero fourth, Wout Schmidt fifth, Valgren, Conrad, Valverde, Sweeney, nice ninth. I think he was even attacking early in the stage, Harry Sweeney for Lotto Soudal.
Will he be in the highlight back?
Hopefully. I mean, ASO, I mean, I'm paying them all this money. The least they can do is put in the young Australian 2 days in a row. And Bonnemore 10th, Sepkoski 12th, and Pache, I think, had attacked. Benji, think about this. If Bahrain Victorious had brought, say, instead of Padun or Capecchi, if they brought Mohoric or another rider like that.
Arashiro.
Yeah, for example, Cole Bradley would have 4 Dauphiné stage wins out of 5 stages.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. Like, Trotnik, for example, but obviously he came from the Giro, so that's a bit impossible to do 2 races on the same day. But still, I think that type of rider would be very very helpful here. He would be able to get over the climbs. He would be able to help.
Hausler. Where's Hausler?
He's training for Roubaix, mate. He's got to win.
Seriously, like the point, yeah, he's doing the Tour of Slovenia. I feel like they're putting a lot of pressure on Hagen Turns to do something that's not like their actual role. Like the Hagen Turns are coming here probably for their own GC. This is not the guys they are. And then they're like, we want you to set up Sonny 4 days in a row. I feel like Hausler and, Fred Wright, other riders would have been better to pair with Cole Bradley. But what's your thoughts on it?
I think I agree, but I think that they've got this preset plan at Bahrain to use Bauhaus with Hausler and Fred Wright throughout the season. And that's been happening the entire season so far. So perhaps that's like one, we call this a clique in Belgium, like one group of people within the team that are doing the same kind of schedule. And I think that's what they're doing. And I think that's why they're not pulling those apart. I wonder, do we still have like bubbles in teams COVID-wise?
That's a good point. I don't know. Did like, well, UAE are all vaccinated, so do they even have to do that stuff? I'm not sure, to be honest. But here's a GC movement. Still Pürstelberger 1 second ahead of Lutsenko. I actually thought Pürstelberger might have attacked late too if he had the legs. The only real move is Thomas moving up ahead of Port and Van Wilder. I was kind of hoping, you know, Richie would block off Thomas' move in the last 800 meters, you know, close the door on him, but he didn't. Now Thomas is back ahead of him on GC, 14 seconds or 13 seconds behind Lutsenko. So normal services resume. Thomas has pretty much made up all the time he lost yesterday in the TT, same time now as Kelderman. So trouble for the other GC contenders. Tomorrow's stage should be GC action, 167 Ks long, and pretty flat for the first 100 kilometers. Then we got 5K, 6.5% descent. Then the Col de Port, 7.7K, 6.5% descent. And then straight into the Côte de la, the name is blocked for me, Côte de la, la Frette. I'm fretting over the name of this. They broke it into... Well, they've broken it in on the profile into two separate climbs. But to me, it just looks like 6.7Ks at 5.8%. With a little false flat section in the middle. And then it looks like it flattens off in the last K or so. I'm just looking at the profile. Yeah, it looks like almost false flat, 3, 4% uphill in the finish. I'll tell you who should be a big favorite for tomorrow's stage again, Benji, is Geraint Thomas. But I want to ask you, can Aaron Barou win this? You're talking about him. Is this too hard for him?
I think that the action on Col de Port will be too hard. And I think that while the Col de Port is called Col de Port, I don't think Port is going to win the stage. I'm more looking towards Lutsenko. And the reason is that if Lutsenko is on his day, then he can get over that climb in the first group. We saw it in UAE Tour last year. We saw it in Oman a few years ago. We saw it in plenty of races at certain points in this guy's career. I think that my predicted bronze medal for the upcoming Tokyo Olympics will be winning the stage. And that is Lutsenko.
Valverde.
No.
Oh. You're going with Lutsenko for the stage from an attack or from like a big group at the finish?
Following and then beating people in the group.
I think it's going to be a big group in the finish. I don't like Lutsenko's race savvy in the final 500 meters.
Nah, that's true.
He's probably going to embarrass me now. What about Asgreen, Benji? Too hard for him?
Yeah, I thought so yesterday as well. I think that this on paper seems like a doable parkour for Asgreen. It depends on whether he can hold on the climb, but I'd expect him to be relatively able to do so. And if he can stay there, then it could genuinely work out. And I can't tell you if he's going to win, but 5% are not the percentages where I see Asgreen necessarily dropping. So indeed, Aramburu, you mentioned me, well, you tried to talk me into saying Aramburu again. I'd love to, but this is going to be a harder one, I think. I think that while I do trust his climbing, I don't think it's good enough perhaps to follow if an Ineos strain goes mad on Col de Port. But then again, will they? Like, they should.
I don't think so.
Or are they going to wait for La Plagne? Because that fits much better.
If I'm Ineos, I control this. I want a group sprint at the end, and I lead out Thomas with Kwiatkowski, and he's going to take bonus seconds. I think that would be my plan with Ineos. I wouldn't go crazy at all on the Col de Port. I'd keep it all together. And then this final suits Thomas if he has the same legs as today. I think if Valverde doesn't come top, if the break doesn't win, if Valverde doesn't come top three in tomorrow's stage, then I don't know what to say, really. The finish suits him perfectly. One would think Colbrelli and Aaron Barou and Barbero will be dropped. That's got to be an option for him. From the break, I want to see Ben Hartmans. He is currently 17th on GC. So he's, where's that? Yeah, he's at 52 seconds. And it's like Hartmans is not coming top five in GC here. And he's denying himself an opportunity for the stage win tomorrow.
I'm going to change.
Oh, no.
Aurélien Parapente. He's like top 15 in GC now. He had that sprint in Marseille at the start of the season, and I think that he can get over the climb with some of the best climbers and try and win the stage accordingly. I think that might work out. But do you expect an attack from someone like Nairo in green on the Col de Port?
Col de Port? I mean, 7K, 6.5%.
He's got to go early. He can't wait for the last climb.
But you can't, Benji. It's all flat before then.
Yeah, you're right.
It's 5K, 6.4%. What are you going to do? Attack it? Attacking Kwiatkowski and all the Ineos riders and Gagan Hart. I mean, suicide. Like, you can't there unless you're on some next level, you know, legs, which I don't see. So
exalt, yeah.
I just don't see it by the Ineos control on that cat too, to be honest. And I don't know how technical the descent is off the back of it. Maybe someone can try something there. And I actually do think Aaron Brew and Co can make it over that climb. Maybe it's too long. It depends on the Ineos pace. Depends on. I hope they do. But then they'll probably get dropped in the final as well. Yeah, but a pretty interesting stage tomorrow. Hopefully, it could be a lot of control and a group mountain sprint at the end. And we hope you enjoyed this recap of stage 5. The Dauphiné is certainly heating up. We've got some big stages coming up shortly. But until then, we'll see you tomorrow. Ciao.
Selling a little? Or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.